we begin with an alternative perspective on the state of the disunion. Political parties generally blame each other for paralysis in Congress. Writer and columnist Michael Lind thinks it's a mistake to understand polarization in the U.S. as a chasm between left and right. The appropriate directions are north and south. And he makes that case in his recent column in Salon. It's called The White South's Last Defeat. Michael, welcome to Word of Mouth.
Thank you for having me.
Well, Michael, of course, we all know the history. Dixie was indeed driven down by the Union. Now, your ancestors were from the South. How did that narrative fit into the psyche that, or the way that you grew up?
Well, when we were kids, we would act out war movies, either from World War II or the Civil War. And I remember there was never any trouble getting kids to volunteer to be Germans, but you could never find many who wanted to play the Yankees.
Well, of course, that's still very deep in the Southern psyche today, but where does it really fit? I mean, did you think of yourself as a minority tribe against the mainstream in the U.S.?
Well, no, and that's why I argue that what I call the third defeat of the South, the demographic defeat, is the greatest psychological shock to white Southerners, particularly conservative white Southerners. Already in Texas, non-Hispanic whites are a minority, largely as a result of Latino immigration in the last couple of generations. One Southern state after another in the next few decades is likely to become a majority-minority state. And that is a greater psychological disruption, I think, for a lot of white Southerners, even than losing the Civil War, because between the Reconstruction and the Civil Rights Revolution, the white South managed to carve out its own little apartheid country within a country, often described as a white man's country. It was often used as a term to describe the South. So the dislodging of what was an overwhelmingly hegemonic ethnic majority into minority ethnic status, simply being a minority group among others, I think is driving a lot of what I describe as the hysteria and aggression of conservative white Southerners. And it influences national politics through the fact that the former Confederacy is now the geographic base of one of the two parties, the Republican Party.
Well, you come up with a series of narratives that kind of maintain this hegemony that you spoke of. Narratives very distinct from the rest of the U.S., especially that of America as a melting pot. Let's dig into that a little bit. How do white Southerners think of themselves apart from?
Well, by the 1840s, most of the northern and midwestern states had multiple white ethnic groups. In addition to the Mayflower people who had come over from Britain in the colonial era, there were growing numbers of Germans and Irish, and later of Italians and Greeks and Jews and people from Eastern Europe. So by the 20th century, outside of the South, again, within a dominant white group, there was this idea that the society was pluralistic and people had ancestors from different countries. On the contrary, in most of the South, with some exceptions, Texas had some German immigration. There were some other exceptions. For the most part, white Southerners until very recently have been descendants of people from the British Isles who came over during the colonial period, predominantly English and Scots-Irish. And so there's just not the experience of working with other white ethnic groups, Irish and German Americans, much less African Americans and Mexican Americans as equals. I think the experience of cultural pluralism among whites in the Northeast and Midwest and West Coast has made the transition to a majority-minority status for non-Hispanic whites in those areas probably less of a shock than it is for white Southerners of British descent.
So in addition to considering themselves like the true unhyphenated Americans, I think is the point you make, they also consider themselves the true believers maintaining the Protestant religion.
Well, that's right. There's no tradition of religious pluralism in the South either, apart from Cajuns in Louisiana. There were no substantial groups of Southern Catholics. Obviously, there were some Southern Catholics. Most Jews were located in the Northeast, although there were always a few Jewish families in the Deep South. But so for most of its history, the South was not only overwhelmingly British in descent, but overwhelmingly Protestant. And the basis of evangelical Protestantism is the claim that it is the true religion, not simply that Christianity is true and other religions are false, but that the evangelical Protestant version of Christianity is the true religion. So again, there's not that history of melting pot pluralism that simply is second nature in the industrial states or in even in New England, where Catholics, Jews, and Protestants have interacted politically for generations.
And of course, there are there's been a lot of migration to the South from the North. Snowbirds, for example. But a lot of people have made their way to kind of creating this new South. Is that taking hold in any kind of way?
Yes, and that will be the future of the South. Essentially, it's starting with the big cities and the metro area suburbs. So you have this expanding part of the South, which is more the way the rest of the U.S. has been for a long time. And I think the old South, the old white Protestant British South, increasingly is being confined to rural areas and small towns. And there's just a danger politically and even when it comes to militias, in terms of law enforcement, when you have former majority groups are dispossessed, some of them adapt to the new order, others reject it, and become a counterculture. They've lost the majority culture that they used to define, so now they become adversarial and define themselves against this new culture that has displaced them.
Well, it is such a fascinating topic to open up, and I'm sorry that we have only a minute left to go. But, we just heard about the State of the Union last night from the president. How does this manifest, this idea of being the true Americans, who, ironically enough, are not part of the rest of America, how is that going to manifest politically in the future?
Well, I think increasingly this strain of American conservatism, Southern conservatism, will become more and more of a counterculture. It will be an adversary culture of an embattled minority. I think it will be dislodged within the Republican Party itself at some point. By the 2020s, the Republican Party, to remain a competitive national party, is going to have to distance itself from this kind of Southern rejectionism. So I don't see much of a future for it in national politics, but since this will be a substantial minority group, it has the potential to influence society and politics for generations to come.
Michael Lind writes for Salon.com, and you can find a link to a really stirring, thought-provoking article called The White South's Last Defeat. That's at wordofmouthradio.org. Michael, thank you so much for your time.
Thank you.
Now coming up, another great gulf between Americans, those who eat gluten and those who don't, when Word of Mouth continues.